So we're in our series on David. And for the last couple of weeks, we've been talking about probably the most well-known battle in all of Scripture, and also probably the shortest battle in all of Scripture. Like with David and Goliath, there's a lot of build-up and there's a lot of context to it, but the actual battle between the two of them, when it really comes down to it, probably lasted 30 seconds, maybe a minute. It's not very long. It's a very short battle. And yet we've been talking about it for 3 weeks now. So in case you're wondering, we are going to finish up the story of David and Goliath today. Just to give you a spoiler alert, David wins. So in case you're not aware of that. So last week we talked about the obstacles David faced, because there were some obstacles he had to overcome before he even got to Goliath. So as a shepherd boy, he's watching the sheep, and there were encounters where bears and lions would come and they would take off with his sheep, and he would go after them and rescue the sheep. And I mean, it's incredible what he tells Saul. He would go after the bear or the lion with a club and grab its jaw and beat it to death with a club. And, you know, like we said last week, that's pretty hardcore. And that prepared him for this experience facing Goliath. And David is telling Saul this, and he's saying, God gave me victory over the bears and the lions, and he's going to give me victory here and now today as well. And so we talked about how our past experiences and God's faithfulness in our lives, it's important to remember those things, because that gives us confidence and faith for the bigger challenges that we face in our lives. And then we also talked about the critics that David faced, his oldest brother Eliab, and then King Saul, and both of them, they belittled him and they undermined him and basically said, you can't do this. You don't belong here. You're just a child, and he's a warrior. He's been a warrior since his youth, and you have no role here, David. And yet David was able to work past that and not absorb the criticism, but to go past that and to face Goliath anyways. And so the main point we made last week is that many of the smaller things in our lives, God allows into our lives to equip us and to train us for the bigger challenges and the bigger opportunities. And so there are lessons for us to learn if we will notice them and pay attention to them in the smaller things. So we're going to pick up where we left off in 1 Samuel chapter 17. We're going to start in verse 38. So David tells Saul, he says, I've got this because God is with me and God's going to give me victory. He's given me victory in the past and he'll give me victory again today. And so Saul basically agrees to it, and he says, okay, and best of luck. I hope this works out for you. So we jump down to verse 38. Then Saul gave David his own armor, a bronze helmet and a coat of mail. David put it on, strapped the sword over it, and took a step or two to see what it was like, for he had never worn such things before. I can't go in these, he protested to Saul. I'm not used to them. So David took them off again. Verse 40, he picked up 5 smooth stones from a stream and put them into a shepherd's bag, and then armed only with his shepherd's staff and sling, he started across the valley to fight the Philistine. Okay, there's a lot we could say about Saul's armor. I was saying earlier this morning during our prayer time, I could probably spend another 5 weeks talking about David versus Goliath, but we want to finish the story up today. So we're just going to go past this very quickly. Let me just point out 2 things about this whole encounter with Saul's armor. David uses what David is familiar with. He goes out with just his staff and his sling and a few stones. In other words, what he is used to using from all of those years as a shepherd boy, where he has been faithful to God in the small things, faithful to God in the things that might have seemed insignificant, all of those years sitting out on a hillside watching the sheep, seemingly wasting his time, what's he doing? He's got his staff, he's got his slingshot, he's practicing, and all of that time was preparing him for this moment in time. And the reason I point that out is I think it's important for us to make sure that we do not despise the small things in our lives, that we do not despise the small beginnings. Maybe God has given you a ministry that you feel is insignificant and unimportant. And I can tell you this, if you are faithful in what seems to be small and insignificant, God will use that to train you, to prepare you, to equip you for something much bigger at another point in your life. But if you reject it because it's small, if you reject it because it seems it's not important enough for somebody like me, if you reject it because of that, you're going to miss out on the best training ground God could bring into your life. That's the one thing. The other thing I want to point out about Saul's armor is this, that Saul's armor, had David worn Saul's armor and taken it into battle with him, it could have prevented him from depending fully on God. It would have been very easy for him to then say, well, I've got this armor, I've got this sword, I've got everything I need, and to kind of leave God out of the picture. And I think sometimes we do that when things are going well in our lives and we think we're protected, we think we've got everything lined up, we tend to kind of put God aside. And then when things turn bad in our lives, all of a sudden we need God again. And I think it's important that David said, I'm not going to use Saul's armor because my dependence needs to be on God and God alone. And so he goes out and faces Goliath pretty much unarmed. He has no protection whatsoever. And the other thing about that too is I think had he gone out there with Saul's armor and Saul's sword, it would have given the onlookers another explanation for why David was able to defeat Goliath. Well, of course he could defeat Goliath. He's got the king's armor. He's got the best. He's got the king's sword. He's fully equipped. He's got everything that he needs, even though none of them were willing to go and face Goliath. They could have accredited his victory to what Saul gave him instead of his dependence on God. And so David goes out there with nothing but a slingshot and his dependence on God. I think it's interesting. And we see so many examples of this throughout the scriptures. The number of times that God kind of stacks the deck against himself only to come through in the last second. Have you ever noticed that in the stories where God builds up just this impossible obstacle and he allows things to get really, really bad and then he comes through in a dramatic and a miraculous way? And so we have this guy named Abraham, and God shows up and says, Abraham, you're going to be a father. You're going to be a father of nations. The problem is Abraham and his wife Sarah can't have kids. But God promises you're going to be a dad, and years go by and years go by, and Abraham is blowing out the candles on his 100th birthday cake before God fulfills that promise. And so God sets up an impossible situation, and then he comes through and does the miraculous. Years after that, hundreds of years after that, God would then allow that nation that Abraham birthed, the nation of Israel, to be cornered between the Red Sea on one hand and the Egyptian army barreling down on them on the other hand, ready to kill them. And God waits till the last minute and basically parts the water and they walk across on dry ground. God sets up an impossible situation and then he comes through and he rescues his people. The story of Elijah on Mount Carmel, he's facing off against all of these false prophets, hundreds of them, and they kind of have this contest to see which God is going to answer prayer. And the prophets of Baal, they have this altar set up, and they're praying for their false god to bring fire down from heaven, and nothing happens. And then Elijah goes over, it's his turn, and he soaks it down with water, gallons and gallons of water, until it's just sopping wet, and there's no way that like just a loose spark could possibly light it on fire. And he prays this simple prayer, and boom, God brings down fire from heaven, consumes the whole thing, and God sets up an impossible situation, and then he comes through. Jesus, brutally murdered, crucified, placed in a tomb, sealed, guarded, and his dead body is there for 3 days. An impossible situation. And on the third day, that stone bounces away, and Jesus walks out, and death is conquered once and for all. And here we have David, refusing to wear armor as he goes up against a man twice his size, covered in armor, and he has victory over this giant. You see, the point is, how do you explain any of those stories apart from God? You can't. And that's the whole point. David demonstrates his full dependence, his full reliance is not on what I can do for myself or what somebody else can do for me. My dependence is on the God who has empowered me to fight this battle and to win. Okay, so again, several of you are wondering if we're ever going to actually finish this story. So here's what we're going to do. I'm going to read through the rest of it. From time to time, I'm going to jump in, make some random comments, and then there's one main point I want to drive home at the end of the story. So here we go. Let's jump down to verse 41. Goliath walked out toward David with his shield bearer ahead of him, sneering in contempt at this ruddy-faced boy. Am I a dog, he roared at David, that you come at me with a stick? And he cursed David by the names of his gods. Come over here, and I'll give your flesh to the birds and wild animals, Goliath yelled. I think it's interesting. Goliath is kind of amused that this little kid would come out with sticks and stones, and it kind of sounds like he's insulted a little bit. Like he's offended. He's like, am I a dog? Like I'm this giant. I'm the champion of the Philistines, and You've been terrified of me for all this time, and you send out a little kid. That's all you think I can handle? It's kind of like he's insulted that David is the one to come out and face off against him. And you notice the trash talking here, right? Come on over here. I'm going to kill you and give your flesh to the birds and wild animals. And, you know, this is trash talking way before Muhammad Ali ever showed up on the scene, right? And so he's breathing out all these threats. But the problem is Goliath has badly miscalculated because he has no idea who David is or who David's dependence is on. And so David responds back. I love this. Verse 45. David replied to the Philistine, "You come to me with sword, spear, and javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of heaven's armies, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. Today the Lord will conquer you, and I will kill you and cut off your head, and I'll give the dead bodies of your men to the birds and wild animals, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel." So David gives it right back to him, right? And he brings it even higher because not only am I going to kill you, all of your men are going to die too, right? So you think you're going to feed me to the birds and wild animals? I'm going to feed all of your army to the birds and wild animals. So, you know, there's this trash talk going back and forth. But I want you to notice he says, where are we? "Today the Lord will conquer you and I will kill you." I think that's interesting. Because see, depending on God doesn't mean I sit back and do nothing and just say God's going to fix everything. Depending on God also means I play a role in this. I am a part of this too. God invites us to partner with him in the work that he's doing. So depending on God doesn't mean I sit back and do nothing. It means I step forward and I do something, but I do it with my faith in him, with my focus in him, with my dependence on him. And look what David says. He says at the bottom here, "The whole world will know that there is a God in Israel." That's his motivation. I want everybody to know what happened here today, and that will demonstrate that God is alive and that God is real. And then he goes on, verse 47, and then he says, "And everyone assembled here will know that the Lord rescues his people." So David says, I want the whole world to know that God is alive and that God is real. But these guys who are cowering in their tents, who have been terrified by you for 40 days, I want them to know too that God is with us and he has not abandoned us. He rescues his people. And then at the end, he says, "This is the Lord's battle and he will give you to us." You see where David's dependence is? He is not depending, he is not trusting in his own skill set. His dependence is fully on the God who has empowered him to go and face down this giant and to win this battle. And so let's take a look at what happens next. Verse 48. As Goliath moved closer to attack, David quickly ran out to meet him. I love that. He doesn't just walk out. He doesn't march out. He runs towards the battle. He's running towards a giant, a guy who's like 10 feet tall, wearing 200 pounds of armor, and he runs toward him. Totally unarmed, just a slingshot. No protection, no shield, no helmet, nothing. And he runs towards him. That is, like I said, that's hardcore, right? Reaching into his shepherd's bag and taking out a stone, he hurled it with his sling and hit the Philistine in the forehead. The stone sank in and Goliath stumbled and fell face down on the ground. So David triumphed over the Philistine with only a sling and a stone, for he had no sword. And then David ran over and pulled Goliath's sword from its sheath. David used it to kill him and cut off his head. So David slings the slingshot, boom, right between the eyes. Goliath falls down. David runs over, grabs Goliath's sword, kills him, chops off his head. Come to the end of the story, and it tells us David walks in to see King Saul, and as he walks in, he still has Goliath's severed head in his hand. It's like, here's your trophy. Here's what happened today. Here is how powerful God is. Look what God did today. And I noticed something that I thought was interesting. I don't know if there's some deep spiritual lesson in this or not. Maybe you can grab something from this, but I noticed something here. I think it's interesting. We read these stories and we're so familiar with them, and we tend to kind of just read them quickly and bypass them, but I noticed something here I'd never seen before. David ran over and pulled Goliath's sword. Where was Goliath's sword? In its sheath. Goliath didn't even draw his sword. It was still in his sheath. I think that kind of suggests Goliath didn't even think he was going to need his sword. He's like, this is just a kid. I don't need anything. I'm just going to kill him with my bare hands. And David turns the tables and kills Goliath with his own sword. I just thought that was interesting. And maybe there's some deep spiritual lesson in there. So I'll just leave that in your hands and you do with it what you will. But I thought that was interesting. Now, as we said before, this was a representative battle. Goliath, his challenge has been send out one man. We will fight to the death. The losing side will become slave to the winning side for a period of time. That was the plan. So David defeats Goliath. So now the Philistines are supposed to become enslaved to the Israelites for a period of time. Well, they kind of go back on the deal. Here we go to the next verse. When the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they turned and ran. And then the men of Israel and Judah gave a great shout of triumph and rushed after the Philistines, chasing them as far as Gath and the gates of Ekron. So now all of a sudden they're in the battle, right? The armies of Israel, they're like, yes, count us in. Now we've been hiding in our tents for 40 days. But now that this little kid took out the giant, count us in. We're part of this fight. So here we have, so David goes out with a slingshot, knocks him down, takes his sword, kills him, chops off his head. Philistines run away. Battle's over. That's it. That's the story. So what's the point of this story? The little guy can defeat the big guy if he just really puts his mind to it. You can overcome any obstacle, no matter how big it is, if you're really determined enough. Is that the point of this story? It's not the point at all. And that's how the story has been used many times, but that completely misses the point. Take a look again at what David says to Goliath as he is running out to meet him on the field of battle. He says, I come to you in the name of the Lord of heaven's armies. Today the Lord will conquer you. The whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. Everyone assembled here will know that the Lord rescues his people. This is the Lord's battle, and he will give you to us. Here's the main point of this story. As you follow God, as you live out his purposes for your life, there are going to be times you come up against a giant. There are going to be times you face obstacles and you face challenges and you face problems that are much bigger than you, that feel overwhelming, that you have no answer for. That is going to happen. That is part of what happens when we follow God. But when that happens, what you need to know is this: it is not you versus that giant. It's not. It's not just you against that problem, you against that obstacle. It's not. God is there with you, and he is the one who will empower you to experience victory. If you depend on yourself, you're going to miss that. Or if you back away in fear, you're going to miss that. But if you go forward in confidence and faith in the God who has called you and empowered you, that's when you see victory. And that's what we all need to know. So David did not lose heart when the critics said, you're unqualified and you're insignificant and you have no role here. He didn't lose heart, and there's a reason for that. When the bear and the lion came after his sheep and took them off, David didn't go passive. He didn't just sit back and let it happen. He went after them instead of sitting back, and there's a reason for that. When the armies of Israel were cowering in their tents as Goliath is threatening them and intimidating them, David did not go into hiding, and there's a reason for that. David stood up to his critics, and he went up against the bears and the lions, and he took down Goliath. Why was he able to do that? For one very simple reason. Because David was convinced of the power and the presence of the living God. Now, let me just pause here, because I think our temptation, whenever you hear a preacher say something like that, it just kind of goes in one ear and out the other. It's kind of a throwaway line. But I don't want you to miss this, because this is the point. David was convinced that God is powerful and that God is present. In other words, David, it wasn't just an idea. It wasn't just a statement of faith, just a thing that, yes, I agree with this. Yes, I believe this. He was convinced of the reality that God is bigger than any problem I will ever face. God is bigger than the bears and the lions. He's bigger than my critics. He's bigger than Goliath. He is more powerful than anything I will come up against. And not only is he more powerful, he's right here with me to empower me, to guide me, to give me victory. And David was convinced of that. And I'm talking about how important it is to be convinced of that for a reason, because I think I could do a poll and ask the question, is God powerful? And I think most of us, if not all of us, would say, yes, I vote yes, God is powerful. I could ask the second question, is God present? Is God here with us? And I think most of us, if not all of us, would say, yes, I agree. God is present. He is here with us. And I think most of us would agree with that. But I think we would also agree many times there's a huge gap between what we say we believe and what we allow to actually impact our everyday lives. That many times there's a big difference between the truth we affirm with our words versus how we respond when we're faced with a problem, with a difficulty, with an obstacle that challenges what we say we believe. So let me give you a couple of examples. For example, it's one thing for us to say, I believe God is loving and I believe God forgives sin. We talk about that in church all the time. We believe that, yes, God forgives sin and yes, God loves me. And we say that and we believe it, but does that belief become action? Does it become our response? How do we respond when we feel shame because of some sin we've committed? Because maybe we gave in to that same temptation that we promised we would never do, but we gave into it yet again. Do we in that moment believe in God's grace and God's forgiveness and God's unconditional love to the point that we run to him and say, God, I need your forgiveness? Or do we allow guilt and shame to creep in and to control how we feel, and then we run away from God because we're not really sure if he's going to forgive me this time? What we say we believe versus how we respond when we're up against it, many times there are two very different things. It's one thing for us to say, I believe that God is in control and God has great plans and God answers prayer. We say that and we say we believe that, but then how do we respond when we pray and nothing seems to happen as a result of our prayers? Do we give up? Do we yell at God? Do we make a decision that, you know what, I guess God has abandoned me and I'm on my own and I have to figure this thing out for myself? But what about, you know, we say, I believe that God is the God of the impossible and God does the miraculous and God is powerful. And we say that and we sing those songs and we say, yes, I believe this. But then how do we respond when we are faced with an impossible situation? What do we do when we need a literal miracle in our lives? There's a difference far too often between what we say we believe versus how we respond when we face a challenge that threatens those beliefs and those words. And that's one of the things I love about David. David was convinced that God is powerful and that God is present. And that's not just something he wrote about in the Psalms. It's not just something he sang about in his worship to God. He believed it so much that he acted on that belief. With nothing but a stone in his hand and faith in his heart, he ran, not walked, he ran into battle after a man twice his size, covered with armor, who had a string of victory after victory after victory. Why was David able to do that? Because he was convinced of the power and the presence of the living God. And so while Saul's armies huddled in their tents and talked about how big Goliath was, David talked about how big God is. And that's a big difference between David and everyone else in this story. You see, David saw Goliath too. He sees, okay, this guy's 10 feet tall. He's wearing 200 pounds of armor. And David knew he was a warrior from childhood. David had all of the same information available to him as those who were cowering in their tents had. He was fully aware of the problem, but that was not his focus. So let me just say something about faith. Faith is not ignorance. Faith isn't some naive person just kind of stumbling through life and pretending that problems don't exist. That's not faith. Faith is fully aware, eyes wide open. Faith says, yes, I see that giant. Yes, I see the problem. I know I can see it. But I'm also ready to see what God's going to do about that problem, about that giant. And that's where my focus is. That's the difference. Saul's army sees Goliath and says, do you see how big that guy is? David sees Goliath and he says, who is this pagan Philistine anyway that he's allowed to defy the armies of the living God? And I want you to notice a couple of key words there. Pagan Philistine and living God. That's how David sees this battle, not me versus Goliath. On the one hand, here is a pagan. What does that mean? That's shorthand for someone who has no relationship with the living God. For someone who worships false gods, who depends on idols made of rocks and stone that can't see or hear, that don't care, that have no power, that cannot respond to prayer. That's Goliath's focus. and on the other hand, the armies of the living God. So as David looks at this battle, the way he sees it is, on the one hand, here's a mere mortal, Goliath, and yeah, he's tall, but he's just a man. And on the other hand is the living God who created all things. Just a little bit unbalanced in a fight. And I don't care if he's 10 feet tall and weighs 500 pounds and has a string of victories. David reminds us in his Psalms, many of the Psalms that he wrote before this moment in time, as he's a shepherd sitting on a hillside, looking up at the countless billions of stars at night, and he's writing these Psalms of praise to God and saying, God, all of these amazing things you have created, it just blows my mind. We can't even begin to comprehend how many stars and galaxies you created, but God, you know every one of them and you call them out by name. And all of this stuff that you put together with just a word, it's bigger than our minds can even begin to understand. And yet, God, you hold it all in the palm of your hand. And so David concludes, you know, the God who holds galaxies in his hands, the God who calls out stars by name, the God who created everything with just a word, he's not intimidated by Goliath. And he's not intimidated by your giants or my giants either. And so as David looks across this valley and sees this massive warrior, he does not see an invincible giant. What he sees is just another evil man who is opposing God and will die in the end. Because David was convinced of the power and the presence of the living God. You see, when we are convinced of that, when that's more than just something we agree to in our heads, that God is powerful and that God is present, when that's more than just churchy words, when it's more than just something that we sing about and it goes no further than that, but when we really own that truth, when we really embrace that truth that, okay, God is mighty. He's bigger than whatever challenges I will ever face. He's bigger than that. He can handle it. And he is present. He is here with me right now. And he will never abandon me. He will never forsake me. He will not let me down. He is a loving father. And so he is involved. When we are convinced of that and own that and believe that and embrace that, it changes how we respond when we come face to face with impossible situations. So the question for us is, where is our focus? Which one defines our reality when we come up against it? Is our focus on what we say we believe about God and that is reality? Or is our focus on the circumstances that challenge what we say we believe? The armies of Saul focused on Goliath's strength. David focused on God's power. The armies of Saul looked at Goliath and said, he's so big, we can't win. David looked at him and said, he's so big, I can't miss. And that's a big difference. So where's our focus? When the giant comes to taunt you. Because like I said last week, you cannot control whether or not you'll face a giant, but you do get to decide how you'll face that giant. So how do we respond? Do we give our attention to how big the giant is and all this list of victories that giant has and how impossible the problem is? Or are we so convinced of the power and the presence of God, our loving Father, that we can look beyond the giant and say, yes, I see the giant, I see the problem, but there's something else going on here too. God is up to something and God is gonna come through because he has been faithful in the past and I know he's gonna be faithful here and now again. I'm not saying to ignore the problems. I'm not saying that at all. And I'm not saying just hype yourself up emotionally. And I'm not saying pretend the problems don't exist and pretend everything's great when it's not. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is this. Your giant doesn't deserve that much focus, but God does. Your giant is not as big as he seems, but God is. And your giant does not have the final say in your life. God has the final say in your life. If God has allowed a giant into your life, it is not there to defeat you. It is there for you to defeat. But if you're going to have the courage and the confidence like David had to go out and charge after that giant and to trust God to come through, you've got to be convinced of the reality of God. Not just in your head, but in your heart. And not just here in church, but out there in our everyday lives. Because he is powerful and he is present. And that is a truth, not just that we sing about here, not just that we talk about here, not just that we read about in God's word. That is a truth that should define our everyday lives. So when you're facing that giant, don't back down and don't lose heart. and don't run and hide in the tent, and don't back down to the critics. Pick up the stones and the slingshot. Take in your hand what God has given you and go out under his empowering, under his anointing, with your confidence in him, and take down that giant.